Hello and welcome back to another episode of Adventures in Movies, where we talk about the Indian genre films you've never heard of, the ones you can't hear enough about, and the ones you never want to hear about again. My name is Nathaniel Muir, and I'm the movie editor at AIPT. Joining me on these ongoing adventures is the host who loves projects about wolves.
Yeah, yes, I love all wolfy projects, whether they be hunting. Why was the title that?
Because that
I'm Blake, by the way.
That's a very good question. And I'm thinking about the movie. And the only thing, one of two things, either the actual trip from taking the criminals from the Philippines to South Korea, that might have been Project Wolf Hunting.
Wolf Hunting, yeah.
Yeah, but it seems like they had already captured the wolves. So I don't know. So I'm thinking maybe it was the flashback involving the Japanese experiments.
Okay. Acceptable.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing. Now, that for those who haven't seen that movie, they're probably like, Philippines, boat, criminals, Japanese experiments? Like, yeah, it's that kind of movie.
Yeah, check it out.
Absolutely check it out. Last
one our best of.
Yeah, it was one of our best of. The first one that was brought up by you. For those who didn't check out our favorite movies of 2022, it's on YouTube right now. And all our episodes you can find wherever you can find the best podcast. So definitely check it out. It's the beginning of the year and you need to put a playlist together. We're here to help. A few weeks ago, we talked about the awesome Scream 6 poster. Been a couple of weeks now, and has it aged well in those few weeks? I still think it's like the best movie poster we've seen in quite a while.
Yeah, it's a cool poster.
It's cool. Even at the time, we joked about how looks like someone might have done it in a few minutes, like during their lunch break or something. But
sure, but brilliance can come in quick bursts.
So yeah, exactly. Super creative. it's a subway map, so essentially it's just a bunch of lines, but it's really cool because it also the stops are like characters who had died. And for those who haven't seen it, check out Scream 6 subway poster. It really is
pretty cool.
And of course, you can't let good things go. Yeah, like instead of just ending it at that, which would have been a great final poster. They had to give us the floating heads poster. Yeah.
So now you get to see the one that you're going to see at every theater in their playbill. It's a bummer.
Yeah.
The floating heads. It's the it's very classic Scream, which is all your major players put on the canvas with Ghostface in the mix. Yeah. And I guarantee you one or more of these people are the killer.
Super, super generic. Like it, I think they should have done this one a few weeks ago because, like you said, this is the one that's going to be in the programs and it's going to be outside your movie theaters. It's going to be the one that when you're waiting for your friends to come and you're looking at what's coming up, that's what you're going to see. Like that subway poster is going to be relegated to like Reddit and stuff like that. Or they should have ended with the subway poster, right? I mean, you got to do the floating heads poster, I guess.
Got to do the floating heads, and Jenna Ortega has never been hotter. So I just mean like in the public eye. So so yeah, you got to put her face on something so people go walk by and go like, oh, Wednesday's in that. It's like, yeah, she was in the last one too.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. I will say what to your point about Jenna Ortega when I saw the floating heads poster, like. The very first person I noticed was her, like immediately. Right. It's like, so it's a generic poster, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of them were just like, we got to get it out there, but it's you have to do it.
Yeah, yeah, and it's got the iconic Empire State Building in the middle of it. So
yeah, yeah,
maybe I mean that plays a role. Maybe the Empire State Building's the killer.
Maybe it's one of those like maybe at the top of the Empire State Building at midnight type of thing. Yeah. Oh, no spoilers, but I think we just did it.
Oh, so shit.
As you're listening to us, we're recording this on the same day that the day after the Oscar nominations were announced. So I know you've had a chance to kind of glance over it. What sticks out about the Oscars this year for you?
I guess this isn't any different any for you, for me, is I haven't seen any of these. but it seems like I did see Top Gun, which is in the mix. but uh no I I guess, you know, it's a lot of names you don't normally see, actually. And then there's Steven Spielberg. But Gotta have Steven Spielberg. But names that I'm kind of surprised by, to be honest with you. Ana de Armas. I don't find her, like, the greatest actress, to be honest with you. She's cool. She's great. But yeah. I don't think she's exceptional. So I was kind of surprised to see her there. Other than that, Jamie Lee Curtis? That was kind of a surprise.
Yeah. Well, she is good in that movie. Well,
I haven't seen it. So,
yeah. Well, that movie, it's Everything Everywhere All at Once. That's the lead nomination getter right now, which is
right.
Kind of surprising to me. It's
11, I think.
11 nominations, including Best Picture. And like you mentioned, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michelle Kwan for Best Actress. Like, it's leading the pack, which is really awesome. This year, they have a few more blockbusters. Top Gun, Avatar, haven't seen it, but by choice. So that one's being ignored. Elvis, that's also kind
surprised
of
surprised to see that there.
It was good. I didn't think it was that kind of good, but I mean, I don't know. It seems like they're kind of doing something a little different this year, because Triangle of Sadness is kind of one of those names and movies that you feel like, oh, it's indie movie, did really well at Cannes, so like you would figure that the whole list would be filled with movies like that, but
right.
Not really. They kind of seems like everything Everywhere All at Once was also like really, really buzzy at the middle of the year before Top Gun, I think.
Sure was. Yeah. It was basically the movie probably the movie I heard about the most all year, to be honest with you, as far as like people being like, man, have you seen it? And, you know, it's still one of those things that I'm like, man, I really feel like I've kind of missed out. So that's high on the list of things to see for sure.
I would agree with you that. So Top Gun was like the. It made buku bucks, so that's, you know, the one I heard about that. But Everything Everywhere All at Once and Barbarian are the two movies that I heard the most about. Yeah. Like, you got to check it out. Like, I can't tell you what's going to happen, but you absolutely have to check it out. And then, like, 2 days later, hey, did you see Barbarian? Did you see Everything Everywhere All at Once? Those are the two movies that did that. And what's her last name? Armas.
Ana de Armas, yeah.
Yeah, interesting pick, because Blonde, like, that was a pretty polarizing movie. Like, there's people who absolutely hated that movie.
Oh, I thought it was going to be, I thought it was, like, up for, like, Razzies and stuff.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it is. And, like, I've heard people that are, like, just absolutely can't stand that movie. And then when I saw she was nominated for a bit, I will say that I haven't heard one bad thing about her performance.
That's good. That's encouraging.
I haven't seen the movie myself, but I really wanted to see it. And then when I heard all the negativity around it, I was just like, what's the point?
Right.
So, just really quick. I know most of these movies I haven't had a chance to see either. I'm pretty sure that The Fabelmans, I haven't seen it, but I just think that, like, I don't think they can help themselves. Like, they have to give. And if he doesn't get this, and he's definitely getting Best Director. It's one or the other. They want Steven Spielberg to speak.
Of course they do, which is such a masturbatory thing for the Academy Awards, I think, right? Like, honestly, like, when I think of the Academy Awards, I think of, like, Steven Spielberg. Like, those are the names I think of already. So this is a critics thing, right? Is this like the Screen Actors Guild? How does the Academy work even?
I think the Golden Globes is whatever the Hollywood Foreign Press, I think they vote on. I think this is just like anonymous voters do this. So there's really
a rich person's Hollywood club.
They are industry people.
Definitely industry people. Yeah. Right. So yeah, I feel like they just love Steven Spielberg. So yeah, you're probably right. That's disappointing. I hope Everything Everywhere All at Once, even though I haven't seen it, I hope it wins. I hope it wins, just because Steven Spielberg.
I mean, I like Steven Spielberg as much as the next person, but I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, I'm just ready for new blood. Like, Steven Spielberg has rightfully earned his place in Hollywood. He's like on Mount Rushmore in Hollywood.
Totally agree.
He doesn't need another Academy Award.
And, like, is his stuff even interesting? Did you want to see The Fabelmans? I didn't.
I mean, the idea of, I mean, it's basically the story of his life. So, like, you mentioned, like, a masturbatory project. This is the only reason I wanted to see The Fabelmans was because David Lynch is in it. And then I was just like, I don't want to see a whole movie just to see two minutes of David Lynch. So I just read what it was about. I was like, oh, he's playing the equivalent of John Ford. Or I mean, I think he might be playing John Ford because Steven Spielberg met him when he was younger or whatever.
Right.
And it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's cool, I suppose. But like, I mean, I'm sure it's fine, but not really something I'm interested in.
Yeah. See you later, Steven.
I wouldn't mind if Top Gun Maverick walked away with it. It would just be like, I don't know. I've thought the Academy Award is a joke for years and years.
Right.
But they are the Academy. They're the Oscars. So they do carry weight. So the idea the idea of Top Gun Maverick being the best picture of any year would like just be delicious.
I just love the idea of like a bunch of dude bros walking into work the next morning and be like, bro, did you hear? High five. Maverick won the Academy Award. Yeah.
I knew when I took my bitch to see it when it was over, we had seen the best movie ever.
Because all that plane shit was real, man. It was all real shit, man. That's why.
Dude, Tom Cruise does his own stunts. Did you know?
He's actually an ace fighter pilot.
Get in your Oscar predictions quick, because people that the theories are going to be flying. So I'm going with Steven Spielberg, but I really hope it's Everything Everywhere All at Once is super awesome. So that'll be a good one. Opposite end of the spectrum. So for gosh, as long as I remember, the Razzies have been around, and basically they're just to award the worst performances and movies and whatnot of the year. So before we talk about the big news by them, do they even matter anymore?
No. It's fun for us to talk about, but like we were kind of talking about, it's like, you know, there's people like us and there's like millions of people like us on the internet, you know, talking shit and being assholes and pointing out the flaws nonstop. Right. That's what the internet is for. So no, this feels now the Razzies, well, and as you'll say, feeling a little mean these days.
Very mean-spirited, apparently, because they nominated and I don't have her name here, but the 12-year-old star of the Firestarter remake was nominated for Best Actress. This set people off yesterday. I saw that the Razzies were called classless.
Yes, correct.
Pointless, low level, yes. Bullying. And I will say that I guess you can make an argument for bullying. They've been pointless since like 1985, probably. but we will say this. I have a list here. I have to go through my notes here. But Gary Coleman in 1982 at age 14 was nominated. Macaulay Culkin at age 14 was nominated multiple times, actually, so not just at 14. Getting even with Dad, the Pagemaster, remember that one?
Duel with the Pagemaster is pretty trash.
Richie Rich
were pretty bad.
I think most famously Jake Lloyd for Phantom Menace.
Yep,
he was 11, so he was even younger.
Wow. Well, he was dirt. He was the dirt worst that
he absolutely was. He ruined a great character. Let's see here. We have Ryan Kira Armstrong at age 12. This is the Firestarter girl.
Ah, okay.
And then Maddie Ziegler. She was 18 when she was nominated, but I don't know how this works. Oh, she was 14 when she played the role. So I guess there was a few years before
the film
production and gotcha. 18 when it came out and she was nominated, but 14 for her performance. So I have a history of this. I've really never heard of anybody complaining about it, honestly. I don't care that they nominated a 12-year-old girl. Is it mean-spirited? Like, I don't know how much they had to do with Downfall of Jake Lloyd, because Star Wars fans are pretty pissy and they were pretty upset about it. So
yeah,
Razzie or no Razzie, I don't know if that guy had any career after the Phantom Menace.
I think he was kind of a piece of shit anyway. So I vividly remember an interview with him like at a skate park, like when he was older, and he was like with earrings and been like, you know, fuck George Lucas. It was like, yeah, dude, if you'd have played your cards right, dude, you could have been making hundreds of dollars at conventions for years to come. So Now nobody likes him.
But you could have been Haley Joel Osment.
Hey, Haley Joel's found a whole new, like, he's totally just working with how he looks now, which is like a weird, he's like a weird looking neck beard person. Yeah. And he's like good at it. So like, I like where Haley Joel Osment's career went. I'm glad he didn't end up like, you know, like Huck Finn or one of those guys. Dark. But the Razzies, dude, I, you know, I don't care. I mean, we'll talk about Firestarter later. But you know, I don't care. Like, if she was bad, cool. It's the Razzies. It's kind of all tongue in cheek anyway. You know, it's, is it mean spirited? Yes. Is it bullying? I don't know, to some degree, I guess, but it's all done with a, like, hey, we're kind of a joke. I think they know that. It's just publicity. You know, it's just they get to get their name out one time a year.
Right.
And this is it. And honestly, people getting pissed about it is just getting more people to go like, what's the Razzies?
No, it's true. And two things. One, my favorite joke in Deadstream is when he goes into the attic and there's a rocking chair and he's like, imagine Haley Joel Osment was there. Oh, as an adult. Oh. Super funny. Oh,
great line. Yes.
Yeah. The Razzies, like, there's some people who are upset about them picking on a 12-year-old are also picking on 12-year-olds, I would imagine, right, online, or their 12-year-old themselves. But the Razzies, like, they've kind of like, they run their course is really what it is to me. Like, I don't know. Like, it seems like it's a joke that's I didn't even remember the Razzies. I never remember the Razzies.
Never.
They have to do something really crazy. And then this year they nominated this 12-year-old. Last year it was, I think it was worst performance by Bruce Willis in a Bruce Willis picture, because he was like in 11 movies last year.
Oh,
just like, but before that, I don't know. I mean, that's what we're here for. That's
right. Right. And they may know their stuff. I do see Jurassic World Dominion on this list, and I turned that movie off the other day. It was so
I say that they don't know shit, because I did read that last year, the year before, whenever, they nominated Ben Affleck for worst supporting actor for The Last Duel.
Oh,
that's just not knowing your shit.
Yeah.
I think the reasoning was because he was ridiculous. It's a fucking ridiculous character.
A ridiculous fop, and he was awesome.
It was an amazing performance. It was like a critically, and not just us, this was a critically acclaimed performance. So yes. I think The Shining actually is a Razzie winner also.
Oh, so, yeah.
They don't know their stuff. Sandra Bullock won I just read this story today. It's actually kind of funny. She won the Razzie. She actually showed up there surprising everyone to pick up her trophy. The next day she won an Oscar.
Good for her. Hello, Sandy B.
Yeah, they don't know shit there, really. And as funny as the joke was and is when you're 13, 14, it's kind of like, meh, once you're older. All right, enough about the Razzies.
That's right, Patrick. Let's look forward to Genre of the Future.
A few movies that are going to be in theaters on, maybe as you're listening to this, you can check your listings. It just may be in a theater near you. So our first movie is Blood. Skeet Ulrich making a return to the genre field. He is in a movie about a young boy who wanders out into the woods, bit by a dog. All of a sudden, he needs something to keep him alive. I'm assuming it is blood. But to me, this sounded like a weaker version of My Heart Won't Beat Unless You Tell It To. And based on the trailer, too, that's kind of the vibe that I got. A little weaker, and also in a more rural area.
Right. And I know My Heart Won't Beat Unless You Tell It To was like kind of divisive. Like I talked to some people that watched it and they didn't like it very much. We loved that movie. I got the similar vibes, immediately thought of that. I don't know what it is about this. It's super disinteresting to me. Like it's not that I'm a big hater. Like I love Skeet Ulrich. He's awesome. I've missed him and stuff, and I'm sure he's been doing stuff. I just missed it, but if I check it out, it'll be to check out his performance. Probably this looks pretty generic, and it's unfortunately a trailer that kind of gives away a whole lot. So I'm super lukewarm on it. I guess I'm not gonna tell people to avoid it by any means, but I'm kind of lukewarm on it.
I think you used the perfect word. I hadn't thought of it, but yeah, disinterested.
Yeah,
it doesn't look bad. It doesn't look bad at all, actually, but it just doesn't draw you in. Even if I hadn't seen My Heart Won't Beat, like, this just doesn't have a hook to it for me.
No, I agree. And it's just, man, when that's putting a, I mean, obviously most of this movie is going to be, was it Michelle Moynihan and the kid?
Yeah.
And man, it's just one of those things where it's like, dude, that kid better be a good actor, because that's going to be a miserable experience. It's like the Babadook. I mean, we should rewatch that for the podcast, because like, I hated that kid so much and it ruined that movie for me. So.
You know what? Yeah, that's a really, really good point, and not a bad idea, actually. Yeah. Speaking of not so great trailers, Fear. We did the Megan special edition a few weeks ago. We didn't talk about the trailers we saw, and one of the ones we saw is possibly the most generic horror trailer you will ever see. Not necessarily a bad thing, but you know what? I couldn't even tell what the movie was about. And I read the blurb about it, and it sounds like a couple goes off to the woods to hang out, and they have to encounter their worst fears.
Oh, shit. I didn't get that at all.
The trailer doesn't let you know anything. It's just a group of people are at a cabin, and shit's happening, and that's it.
Yeah, no, that was an awful trailer. So much so that when the trailer ended, I leaned over to you and I said, that was a really bad trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so bad. Yeah.
My big takeaway was that I kept telling Regina, I was like, hey, is that T.I.? Because I used to like that rapper like 15 years ago or something.
And it was, right?
It was T.I. And the end, it had like whatever his name is, Tip. T.I. Harris.
Oh,
I told you that's T.I.
It is T.I. So one of the other things with this trailer, if I remember correctly, it seems to like introduce new characters in every cut.
Constantly. So yeah, you can't get drawn into anything because one, it's one of those like quick. Right. Like in all of those cuts, like you said, it's a new character like every 3 or 4 seconds.
Yeah. So I have no idea how many people are in it. Maybe like 20 or 30.
ensemble cast.
Yeah. But it was really like a bad trailer from the 90s or early 2000s.
That's
what it reminded me of the most. And if that was the idea, because it seemed like a very early, late 90s, early 2000s movie plot, then success.
Yeah, absolutely. Fear not. Right. Fear not. Oh, we got two lukewarm trailers there. So this next trailer, I mean, we're actually going to have a lot to say about the movie, but not so much about the trailer. So Infinity Pool, latest one from Brandon Cronenberg, rated R version, coming to theaters. Pretty freaky trailer.
A great trailer. And now that I know more about it, I think it's actually a really great trailer. Yeah. It's the kind of trailer that like really leaves you guessing as to what is happening, and you'll understand why later. But I like where Brandon Cronenberg's going with this stuff, and I know that directors don't always cut their trailers. I understand that, but he feels like a guy that would have his hands in it, you know, because he's more like the smaller insular kind of control. And cool trailer. I hope it gets people wanting to see it.
Yeah, like I know when I saw this trailer for, I don't know what movie we saw, but people were, after it was over, they were like, you know, what you can kind of, people were taken aback by it, and rightfully so. And we'll talk more about that later. Mm-hmm. On the show, a lot of times we'll talk about how a movie reminded us of like a Disney Channel thing, or it was young adult, but not very often that we cover young adult stuff. So January 30th, coming to Freeform. The Watchful Eye, which is about a very confusing trailer, because the synopsis is it's a nanny who's taking a job at a high-rise apartment, and she learns that there's more to the tenants than meets the eye. The trailer has a little bit of that, but then there's a lot of like missing, or not like like there's a heist going on, and there's looks a little sexy and stuff. So a lot going on in this one. I don't know. I'm not much on young adult horror, honestly, but it looks like it could be interesting.
I think what this was. So what I think this is it is a whodunit thing for sure. There's lots of, I think with lots of whodunits and who's it's, there's many happenings.
Who did
but
who?
I think that, yeah, but I think this is playing to like the only murders in the building crowd.
I agree.
This is like, I think 100% because of that series. And yeah, if it's a little bit more youthful spin on it, I that sounds cool, sounds great. I'm sure the people that are, yeah, I think the people that are going to be excited for this are going to be really excited for it. I bet it does really well.
I think so too. It's like Pretty Little Liars had a really, yeah, really big follow. I totally agree with you. I got an Only Murders in the Building vibe. Only Murders in the Building, but where they spill the tea. Like constantly. Yeah. That's what I think this one's all about. Oh, we haven't in the past few weeks, and it's kind of just haven't had the time to, but one of the biggest premieres of HBO, actually it's the biggest in quite a while, was The Last of Us. Now, highly, highly, highly acclaimed video game. The Last of Us is the reason I got a PS4, actually. And I was really, really looking forward to the show. Haven't gotten around to it yet. So as we record this, they're headed towards their third episode. So we're a little bit behind here. But we were talking about this, and you actually really have no interest in watching it, you said.
Had no interest in playing the game. Had really? No interest. Yeah, I know. This is shocks a lot of people. My cohort at the brewery, Jonas, is a huge Last of Us fan.
Right.
And we're always talking about this. You would think on its surface level, it's, you know, it's like a fungus zombie thing, end of the world. I mean, it just sounds like it'd be up my alley. I don't know. I was a real big Walking Dead comic book fan. Mm-hmm. And I did a bunch of the Walking Dead stuff, read a bunch of a lot of the series, but I kind of just dropped off that whole like end of the world stuff. And okay. A while ago, you know, so that's I would say that's probably the major factor, is like bad people doing bad things to other people, gray morality. That's a story that I'm accustomed to, but this just, there's just something about it. I never wanted to go through like a handheld tedious story thing, even though I know it was great and people love it. The Last of Us 2, when The Last of Us 2 came out, I was like, well, I'm never going to play this. But because of Twitch and stuff like this, I actually watched a streamer play like 75% of that game.
Last of Us 2? 2.
Right. So I watched all of that. And so, and it is, it's dreary and it's this and it's that.
Right.
And it is a cool story. And it's Pedro Pascal. I love Pedro Pascal.
So good.
Leona Mormont, she's a beast.
Nick Offerman.
Nick Offerman. Dude, this has all the things I should like. I don't want to watch it.
Wow. You know why I thought, so here's what surprises me about you not wanting it. And it's one, because of the horror pedigree, right?
Sure.
But you like, from the movies we've talked about, you obviously love characters. Like the movies you hated, two of them were because of characters. The movies like you love, you talk about characters. And this movie had, or this game and this show, I'm assuming the show, so I guess I can't speak to the show, but if it's anything like the game, you have two incredibly strong characters. And then, yeah, like you mentioned, the story and all that. So that's why I thought it was kind of up your alley. But I can understand like the end of the world post-apocalyptic thing. Like I could totally, and I don't like zombie stories actually. The reason that I even played this game was it was word of mouth, like, and then the graphics are amazing, and then I heard it was really short, so I thought, well, you know, worst case scenario, if it sucks, it's not going to be like a huge time sink or anything.
Right.
And then it was like, I got a bundle on it. It was just a good deal, so that kind of sealed it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's really, really, I will get around to it. Regina not on the show tonight. She was watching it last night, and she had to stop at some point because she said she never played the game, but it was, it sounded like the first 20 minutes of the game, but she said it was just too tense for her. And she just didn't want to go to sleep thinking about that kind of stuff. So,
right. And that could play into it, is like, the last thing I need to do is to be stressed out, really, in any shape or form. And like I love Cormac McCarthy's writing. I think he's one of the, you know, just a fantastic writer. And you know, but a dreary, dark, you know, The Road, and very, very similar kind of tones. And like you said, incredibly strong characters, but like that's just it. Like I know that this thing is going to give me strong characters that I'm attached to, and then horrible things are going to happen to them. That's not necessarily, I'm not saying I won't ever check it out, I'm just saying maybe right now it's just not
not in the mindset right now.
Right.
So this week we have, I think, a really cool episode. We have two world premieres from the Sundance Film Festival, both from the midnight category. Our first one is My Animal. This one actually, the day before it made its premiere at Sundance, it was purchased by Paramount. So that's one of the things that's really big. Yeah, for people like us and the common folk, they just go to watch the movie. But then there's like the big wigs who go to actually purchase movies. Mm-hmm. And My Animal's purchased by Paramount. So I think it was last week or the week before, we were talking about how Paramount Plus has like shit on it. Who knows? I guess we'll talk about whether they're adding shit or not. But so My Animal is the story about a young woman who named Heather, who's living in a small, small town. She's kind of living her life. She's something of a loner until she meets a figure skater named Johnny that kind of changes her world, which is already pretty weird because she's not being allowed on a hockey team. She can't hang out when there's a full moon. She absolutely cannot go out. And she doesn't seem to have much in the way of friends. So then Johnny enters her life. So this is a werewolf story. Well, that's why she's not going out with the full moon. The start, it's very, very familiar. It's the whole, like, I know I'm a werewolf on full moon, so I'm going to chain myself down type of thing. It never really leans into the horror elements after that. It was kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, this whole movie was kind of surprising. But yeah, I you get the idea that this is going to be like real, like, tense, and she's going to be like this real dangerous thing. And I'm not saying she's not.
Right.
But this movie is not about the horror of being a werewolf, really.
It's
more about, you know, having a dysfunctional family and not being accepted for who you are, predominantly being a woman. It didn't latch on to me kind of like I hoped it would, because I was really hoping for some. I like werewolves. We've been getting lots of werewolves. I wanted more wolf action, I guess.
And it starts off like it's going to be a pretty run-of-the-mill werewolf story. Right. And then, as you mentioned, it touches on a whole lot of other things. So I think this went out a few weeks ago, quite a while ago. We talked about Tintoretta, and it kind of advertised itself as a shark movie, but it was really an orgy movie that just happened to have a killer shark in it.
Yeah, occasionally.
I think this movie is kind of a, like you said, family drama, teen romance movie that just happens to have a werewolf in it.
Yeah, exactly. It was the werewolf is kind of a vehicle for civil unrest within the family. It could have been any number of other things, you know, drug addiction. She's in a punk band, you know, could have been almost anything. But this just happens to be she's a werewolf.
You do have a Stephen McHattie being pretty awesome in it.
So, highlight of the movie, Stephen McHattie is just awesome. And if you haven't seen Pontypool, just watch Pontypool. He's one of my favorite, like, he's really like one of my favorite actors. Like, anytime he pops up, I'm like, oh, awesome. I love this guy. Name something he's bad in. Like, he's really good in this.
Yeah, he's good in this. Pontypool, Come Home to Daddy. Just an excellent, excellent, excellent actor. The characters in this, so you mentioned Stephen McHattie, but really, and the mom also, I think she does a great job of playing.
Best on-screen drunk I've seen.
Really, really good stuff. Like, so it seems like, and this is the spoiler warning, we're going to go into some elements of these movies, but we won't ruin too much for anybody. But it seems like that this is a family curse. She's married into the family, though, the alcoholic mother. So she, I don't think, has the same issues as everyone else. And she's trying to cope with it. And I thought that was a really cool addition to the story.
It became my favorite part of the whole thing, to be honest with you, was that interaction. Because at first, you're like, ooh, I hate this woman. You know, she's horrible, and she just is. She's a nightmare. Anytime she's around, they're like, oh God, get her away. But then, like, throughout the movie, you kind of realize, like, oh no, like, yeah, she's this way because, like, she's kind of been made this way. She has to live this outrageously crazy different lifestyle, really, and that she has nothing to do with. She resents her entire family, and you kind of understand why, to be honest with you. But she's also horrible.
She is, but this is, she's kind of the textbook example of a driven to alcoholism type of thing.
Yeah, totally.
the movie, and we've touched on it a little bit, but this is very much a character study. And how much you enjoy the movie is really going to depend on how much you're drawn to the characters. I thought the chemistry between Heather and Johnny, I thought was really, really good. Like, I thought that was the strongest point of the movie.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. That's what kept my attention for sure. Because I wanted to, it invests you into wanting to see their relationship work. And in the ways that it starts to not, you really feel for both of them. I thought they were both really strong performances, actually. Both actresses did just a really phenomenal job. And there's definitely a moment in the movie where, like, there's a break, right? Like, they kind of, like, whatever their relationship is, snaps. You feel it, you know, as an audience member. It is conveyed through the screen very well, I thought.
Yeah, that was really good. And then at that moment, you mentioned that Heather's something of an outsider because she's a female, but then there's a little bit of her. She's also made herself an outsider because of her, lycanthropy? Lycanthropy.
Yeah, lycanthropy.
Yeah, she separates herself, but then she becomes an outsider because people start suspecting that she's a lesbian. Right. I thought that was really, I liked how they added all these additional things to her character and leading to an ending that, to me, and it wasn't as strong as, but it kind of reminded me of Let the Right One In.
I didn't really think about that till now, until you said that, but I completely agree. Very similar, man. Very, very similar. This movie takes you, and you're getting back to the whole lesbian side of things, like, she's being an outcast. She's turned into an outcast among people that know she's a werewolf.
Yeah.
Which is just like, that's such a hardcore thing to put into a movie, really. It is a very unique twist. And just because of that, like at the end of Let the Right One In, you really have, man, you just really feel sorry for both of them, you know, and because they're in this, you know, just toxic relationship, really. And this is not too dissimilar. Pretty powerful stuff there.
Yeah, I thought that worked really well. And then there's the one thing that I was having trouble with it was, so the movie's really, it's kind of timeless. It's frozen and you can't really, they didn't put a date on it, did it? Did I miss that?
I don't think. But it felt like late 80s, 90s, maybe. Like it felt like in the past for sure.
I thought it was like, and I thought what added to that 80s feel was it had this really cool like synth music.
Great
that the soundtrack was really cool. I think they did a really good job of using it because that music is great for a horror context, not really good for a love story, but they were able to use it very well, I thought. And then the use of red lighting in it was fantastic.
The movie visually has this just really neat tone to it, just the colors that they use, because it's not all the time. It's used pretty wisely, I think, as far as like there's like these kind of like dream sequences, and which I think some of that's like some of the best stuff in the movie, really. It is those kind of psychedelic, you know, dream sequences where vivid colors and stuff, but then they tone it back down, you know, and it's like, so what those scenes stand out even more to you.
Right, exactly. I totally agree with you. And then, like you said, like you go from the red light dream sequences to just a snowy yard, which can look beautiful, but in this it's kind of like the more normal of the scene, so it's kind of a weird way to do it, but I thought it drew people in well. The pacing I thought also was like, a lot of times in werewolf movies everything's rushed and frantic and chaotic because that's what the character's going through, but this is just very much like, we're gonna take you through this person's life, like kind of day by day, hour by hour, and I thought that was interesting for a quote-unquote werewolf story.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. And it made those like shots at the moon like very like intense, because you're like, you can actually, you know, you're just waiting for that to be a full moon. And she's cutting it so close, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was an interesting take on it for sure.
So my animal, as we mentioned, bought by Paramount. So just keep your ears out for it. It'll probably be hitting streaming sometime in the next few months. See or no see My Animal.
Oh, dude, honestly, this was like, there was so much about this that I liked, but there was like definitely stuff that I didn't. This was like a really hard movie for me to like decide on. Ultimately, I'm going to say you should see it. I think there's some pretty cool filmmaking going on here. Great performances. I don't think it was necessarily for me. Like, it's not a movie I loved or would rewatch, but it does so much interesting stuff, and it's so unique that I think you should see it.
Yeah, I agree with those things. Like, I would say to see it also. For me, you do have to temper your expectations because I went in expecting like a werewolf movie with like some sort of like love, teen love element to it. I didn't think that the werewolf story would be completely pushed to the background. So the movie really, really had to work extra hard to win me over. And it was a culmination of things. And it really wasn't until like the final like 10, 15 minutes that I was really like, okay, like, you know, like the everything all together, like I can accept this movie. But, yeah, my animal, I think check it out. The other world premiere from the Sundance Film Festival that we're covering is Infinity Pool. This is by Brandon Cronenberg. What we knew that it was about going in was it was a couple that was at a beach resort, and it was going to be a spoof of that. That's like the working theory that we had going into it. It's coming out in theaters. As we talked about earlier, you might be listening to it right now, planning to go to the movie. The version we saw was the NC-17 version of it. So in theaters is the rated R version. Honestly, ratings, I don't think it'll make that much of a difference in the movie. So what did we think of the movie? Immediately, as we're watching the movie, I think within the first like minute, you talked about the imagery, Brandon Cronenberg's direction. There was a shot of, I think, a light that he lingered on. Yeah. He has a very distinctive directing style.
Totally. As far as newish directors go, I think he's got the most distinct style to him. And it's not a rip of his dad at all. It's kind of its own thing. And yeah, he like lingers on like really strange things. And like, this is like it's like a light that you'd find at like a dance club or something.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, and then that kind of leads to like these really disorienting, twisting shots of like landscapes and like beachfronts.
The beach, yeah.
It was instantaneously, you're like, yeah, this is a Brandon Cronenberg movie for sure. Now, whether you like that or not, I think that's, I like it.
Right.
But I don't think it's for everybody.
No, it's not. And kudos to him, because when your last name is Cronenberg, people are immediately going to be thinking of body horror and how weird is this going to be?
Right.
And it does have body horror, and we'll get into the weirdness of his story. Yes. But you're right. Like, if I didn't know his last name, and if someone just said like, okay, watch this movie and tell me what you think, I wouldn't think like, oh yeah, this guy's trying to be David Cronenberg. Like, he does have a style that's all his own. Yeah. There's elements of body horror, and we'll talk about the sci-fi aspect and all of that right now. He's doing his own thing, and I can really appreciate that. Last night, like after we finished watching the movie, we were talking about kind of just very, very generically talking about what we felt about the movie. And you mentioned this is one of those movies that kind of doesn't have a point to it. And I was thinking about it today, and you know, as we're preparing for the show, and I was like, you know what? This movie is filled with contradictions. Like, it kind of doesn't have a point to it. But the whole movie also has this very heavy theme of, I don't know how to describe it, tourists being bad.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, it's not as elegant as The Menu at all.
No.
But it's just as highfalutin. and you kind of get like that same point to it. Like, it's not a world that I belong in, and he's inviting me into it.
You know, you're right. And you know what it reminded me of today as I was thinking about it? The Great Gatsby, which is one of my all-time favorite books.
Right. Great book.
Great book. Convertible driving throughout. But yeah, it's kind of got this like, it's the way, another way I would like to like frame it for people, no pun intended, is like those paintings that you see that have like 10,000 things happening in them. And so you can't just, you looking at it all at once is overwhelming. You have to like pick out little chunks of it. And then you're like, okay, I digested that little piece. And that's kind of how this movie is. If you step back from it, you're like, what the fuck am I looking at?
Right.
But if you get like more compartmental, to the individual scenes and the individual relationships, it becomes more clear, even though it's still just out there, it becomes more digestible, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's one of those things where if you just take it viscerally, like it is what it is type of thing, then you watch it and you'll think like, oh my God, that was, I don't know what to think. It's a really crazy movie. But then once you start to examine it, like I said, beat by beat or brush stroke by brush, however you want to look at it, you see like, oh, there is some nonsense in it. There's some absolutely stuff that kind of, at least to me, doesn't make any sense. But then there's some parts that you're kind of like the character study of Alexander Skarsgård character. Like last night, I kind of got the whole like, oh, and spoiler alert, we're going to talk about little elements of, but we won't ruin anyone's. And this is a twisty story. Oh, yeah. The Skarsgård character last night, we were talking about, oh yeah, they're just messing with him. And today I was thinking about, I was like, man, this is a complete character study of this one dude from him being this, somewhat confident, if not completely confident, for story element reasons, but he's got his act together. So by the end of the movie, he's a frothing animal.
Yeah, like, well, right. And like, I've thought about him, hit that character a lot since last night. And the thing that I'm kind of coming away from it with is like, he's kind of just, he showed up to that place defeated, right? You know, he's kind of a failure. He's one of those people that is so like, I guess he's kind of so consumed by his own shit that he can't really even see what's like good right in front of him, you know? And this bizarre experience that starts to happen to him, you know, his depression just, he gets all consumed with like this new life, which is also maybe not all that it seems.
Right. And what they do with that, it's because this movie can have so many messages in it, and it kind of does. But it kind of ignores them too. Like,
right,
there's a very strong message about class in this, like big definitely time, like how the locals are treated and how the locals treat them back. And then, but how Skarsgård's new gang, his new group of friends, like they're head and shoulders above everyone else for financial reasons.
Right.
And this leads to like extreme hedonism and all kinds of craziness, but it doesn't really take a deep dive into it. Like it and this is where it gets visceral. It doesn't like it's not really subtle, and it's not really like witty about it. It's like it's just in your face. Like they're obnoxious and they can be obnoxious, and here's what they're gonna do. And it's such a weird movie to me that it has all these different elements playing at the same time.
Yeah, and it's hard to imagine a movie that spends so much time on one character. You know, Skarsgård's character, what's his name? James. That to get to the end of that and have him, you know, it's not that he's in the same place that he was before. He's no better.
No.
You know, he's no better. He's worse. And you're kind of left going like, well, everybody else involved is just like evaporates. And you're left with him again. And it's so much of it is about just him and what he's going through to take it where it goes, I think is going to be very divisive. In thinking about it since last night, that's the conclusion I've kind of come to about this movie.
I agree with you. This is, and we say this a lot, but there's either you love it or you hate it. There's no gray area type of movie. The movie as a whole, I think it does allow for some gray area, but I think his story and particularly how it winds up, that is going to be a love it or hate it type situation. It's going to be, I think it's going to be really interesting to hear what people think about how that and just what they think about it all, because there's so many moving parts in this movie. We talked a lot about Skarsgård's character, but the other major person in this is Mia Goth. I think she's just amazing in this movie. Like she goes from this seductive, kind of almost a femme fatale type character, mysterious into this batshit crazy evil person. And I loved her performance the entire time. We talked about this before. Jenna Ortega rightfully is like the scream queen everyone's talking about right now, but Mia Goth, I mean, she has the Ty West stuff, she's in A Cure for Wellness, Suspiria. I mean, she's good. She's a really good actress.
As far as acting chops goes, find me a better one. Anya Taylor-Joy, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mia Goth is pretty awesome in this. She is so multi-faced. you know, like you said, and like to the like even she, this is one of the best like Jokers I've ever seen. Like she yeah. put her in the Joker makeup and the clown makeup, and she could be the clown prince. Like she's insane in this, and then she's disconnected, and then she's very passionate. And she, man, you see so much from her super wide range. She was a super highlight. I would not be surprised if she gets a nomination of some high repute because of this.
Yeah, this was good stuff. And then Cronenberg and his storytelling in this, like it touches on a lot of things. The most obvious thing that they can do with this is, without getting too much into it, they could have gone with like a clone story with a twist at the end of what's real and what's not. It's just a talking point in this movie, which I thought was so crazy because it's such a big element. And it ends up meaning nothing, which, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but because he had so many other story elements that he wanted to cover that the clone thing was just kind of like, it is what it is. Take it or leave it.
Yeah, I love that they kind of like, they didn't rush to the clone thing because I would say it's probably half an hour before you get to that point in the movie. Yeah. But yeah, it and you're, I don't know about you, but I was sitting there thinking like, man, this whole movie is going to be like this gritty in the back of this. This is going to be pumping out clones. This is going to be all grimy and like very Cronenberg. And it totally doesn't do that. No. It totally flips your expectations. And yeah, I thought that was such a neat way to go about it. Yeah. One thing I will say, I wish we'd gotten more of the gang, as you called them. Like I would have loved, like you get a little bit of like why they're there and what happened and how they, I could have gone for 20 more minutes of gang related mischief.
Shenanigans. Yeah.
Shenanigans. Yes.
Totally. I agree with you. And this being a Brandon Cronenberg movie, there's lots of blood and there's some, the beatings. He has just a way of filming beatings that are really like, you feel them, like you hear the pounding of flesh on flesh. Very bloody. There's a part where someone's about to get stabbed and you know it's coming because he's wearing a shirt that's cut right where the belly is. So it's like, okay, this guy's getting cut asshole to appetite. And like, and then it's just a normal stabbing. And then at first I was kind of disappointed, but then it keeps on going and going and going. And you had mentioned like it's going to end with practical effects. That's where you get the stuff that's just in your face gross. And the same thing with some of the more sexual content. And it's just in your face shocking. And this movie is a lot to take in.
Let me put it, my mom would hate this movie.
Oh my gosh, I'd be embarrassed. You'd be in trouble. Watch. Yeah, look, absolutely. This is not a movie you watch in front of like adults or anything. Or even, you know what, even people that are like close friends, because they kind of might wonder what's wrong with you. It's kind of a crazy movie, and it's not
that type of thing. Us degenerates sat on the same couch and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, just had a couple of beers and watched it. And this isn't a, I guess it is a humble brag. We watched an NC-17 version, so
yes, we did.
Pump action Skarsgård going on here. So, Infinity Pool. It's in theaters right now, so you can check it out. Blake, see or no see?
Yeah, you gotta see Infinity Pool. Theater bucks, baby. Go to it. Find a group of your weirdest friends and take them to go see this. And I'm curious to see the conversation that happens out of this. Yeah, you gotta see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Check this out. Where the weirdest, freakiest masks that you can think of. Watch it in theaters and then discuss it afterwards. And I don't know, break into a house or something, but definitely check this movie out. So every Saturday you can find us here. We're a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network, where they have all sorts of horror themed podcasts, including ourselves. We also have an open review policy. So if there's anything that you want to take to us to check out, if you think you can freak us out,
yes,
send it our way and we will watch it.
We double dog dare you, triple dog, as a matter of fact. So how do you do that? You find us on the social medias. You can follow the show on Instagram and Twitter, Adventures in Movies. You can find Nathaniel out there on Instagram. He is Adventures in Nathan. I call him Patrick. You can find myself, Blake. I'm on Twitter at 4-Eyed Horror. Regine is out there somewhere too. Almost falling in sinkholes, I understand. at Danger Chavez on Twitter. And next week, don't look now. It's a bunch of banshees. I don't know what that means. Check it out.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can go to Spotify. Amazon Music has podcasts now, including ourselves. Or you can go to Morbidly Beautiful. Basically, wherever they have the best podcasts in the world, you can find us. Also, go to YouTube. Check us out. Thanks to everyone for the comments. Wherever you listen to us or watch us, make sure to give us a rating or just tell a friend to listen. And that's our cue. We will talk to you next week.
Come out, baby James. Come out.